This is the Max Kellerman Show. Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio.
Yes, the Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. Rams GM Les Snead won't speculate on future of QB Jared Goff, is the headline. Remember, this is after McVay wouldn't commit to Goff either. Let me clue everyone in on a little something in case you haven't picked up on it already. When the coach and the GM are both non-committal, it doesn't look good for the quarterback. Snead on Tuesday echoed coach Sean McVay when it came to the future of Jared Goff. Quote, Jared Goff is a Ram at this moment, Snead said when asked whether Goff would be on the roster in 2021. It's way too early to speculate. The future, that's a beautiful mystery. Remember, that's the Aaron Rodgers quote. Rodgers said that about his own future. McVay said on January 17th, one day after the Rams lost to the Green Bay Packers in the divisional playoffs, he wouldn't commit to Goff's future with the team. Keyshawn Johnson sounded off on this on the morning show here on ESPN Radio. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. This is what Key had to say.
So he's been a solid quarterback, but he hasn't taken the $130, $40 million step. He hasn't done that yet. And I think when you look at it, it's starting to become frustrating to Sean as a coach because he could be a coach killer if he continues playing this way and if you continue to play him.
This is why I say, Keyshawn's not wrong, but this is why I say before you pay Dak Prescott, and they're going to pay him, you better be sure. And I wouldn't break the bank, like break the market for him. I wouldn't reset the market. Dak Prescott, look, I wouldn't have given Goff the contract. I said it at the time. I wouldn't have given Wentz the contract, and I wouldn't have given Dak the contract. But since Goff and Wentz got the contract, Dak should be in line for one just like it, right? More or less. The problem is Wentz contract's killing the Eagles right now. Had Dak taken the money, he turned it down, don't forget, that'd be killing the Cowboys right now because he'd be paid for a full season and he didn't play. And the Goff contract's killing the Rams. And when I say killing the Rams, look, they're in the playoffs and Goff has won playoff games. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's been to two Pro Bowls, but he's not an elite player. And by the way, that's why I'm like, hey, Giants, I don't care. Look, Daniel Jones doesn't have any trade value. But even if he did, if he does have trade value, use it. Trade it. Trade all the draft picks you got. Get Deshaun Watson. Because otherwise, you're in a position that you're trying to wish, you're trying to will your quarterback into greatness. What do the kids say? Speak it into existence. You're trying to wish it into existence. That's what these teams do when they give out these $130 million contracts to quarterbacks who aren't elite. Hey, we're hoping he'll become elite. Great, so when he's elite, pay him. No. We have to pay him now because if he does become elite, he'll be on some other team. So you'll look for the next guy. You know how many teams have been killed? How many quarterbacks get paid over $100 million? A lot of them. Or, you know, who have been paid on that level when their deals come up. In other words, at the top of the market. A ton of them. But how many are elite? By definition, it can only be a couple. A handful. Of course they want to do better than Goff. Goff's okay. But you'd like to do better at quarterback, particularly for $130 million, $120 million. By the way, a trade of Goff would trigger a cap charge of only $22.2 million, and that's manageable. The problem for the Rams is going to be finding a team that's going to take on his contract, which carries $43.325 million in fully guaranteed payments due in 2021 and 2022. There's no way around it. You're going to spend almost $44 million, over $43 million on Goff in the next couple of years. But he ain't going to give you that level of production. He would improve the fortunes of some teams. He's not bad. But the Rams are looking at their team, I think, incorrectly thinking, if we had a real elite quarterback, if we had a step up from Goff, we could win the Super Bowl. And I agree, they could. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Deshaun Watson's available, everybody. Deshaun Watson is available. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, you're hoping, right? He's not going to be available. Deshaun Watson is available, L.A., and he's talking Miami and the Jets. Deshaun Watson's available, Giants fans, and he's talking Miami and the Jets. Why? Because he loves those organizations or those destinations so much, or because realistically they can pull a trade? And why is that? Because they have the draft capital. But why wouldn't the Giants or the Rams be willing to do what it takes to land him? If Deshaun Watson's available, understand, the first overall pick in the draft is incredibly valuable, partly because they're on a rookie deal. And you can, if they're elite, you can juice that rookie deal and put a great team around him. But you're still dealing with uncertainty. You hope Trevor Lawrence turns out to be great. With Deshaun Watson, take away the uncertainty. He's great. Deshaun Watson's great. By the numbers, he's great. The accuracy, the yards per attempt, touchdowns, touchdown to interception, all that stuff, he's great. With his legs, great. And that doesn't even count that little magic pixie dust he has. He has a bag of it. He sprinkles all over everything, gets guys to believe they can win. He wasn't working with a whole lot with the Texans in recent years, but he was winning double digits. He's going to the playoffs. Even when the season would start in disaster, oh my God, they have a losing record. They look terrible. He'd figure it out. He'd figure out a way. Finally, they did such an awful job managing that roster, even he couldn't do anything. But Trevor Lawrence might be better than Deshaun Watson one day. We don't know. We know what Deshaun Watson is. And unlike, see, Jared Goff got that big contract. Doesn't deserve it, right? I mean, all these guys deserve more than they get. That's why there's a salary cap, because the owners are transferring money from the players to them. All these great industrialists and tycoons, they love the free market until it costs them money. Then all of a sudden they want restraints on the free market. They want to collude against labor, essentially. But so Goff, because there's a hard cap, is not worth the money. Deshaun Watson gets more than Goff per year, and he's worth every penny, even with the hard cap. If you have a chance to get Deshaun Watson and you believe you're a quarterback away, and even if you don't, even if you just think you want to build around him, who wouldn't give up three first-round picks? Of course. Brock in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, what's going on, Max? Hey, so I do agree with you on the quarterback situation. Where I have a concern with Deshaun Watson giving up the house for him, right? It's not that he's not a good quarterback, but I specifically remember a few years back when he was going through some of his injuries and people were having the conversation, is his health going to be a problem going forward? Is he always going to be hurt? Can you really trust him? Now he's having a good year, so it's the sexy quarterback talk. What have you done for me lately, right? So not saying that the guy's not a good quarterback. I would just be really concerned giving up the house for a quarterback, because you don't want to be in the Carson Wentz situation where
Let me read you something. Age 23, yeah. He played in all 16 games. I got it in front of me right now. His record was 11-5, 68% completion, 4,000 yards, 26 TDs, 9 interceptions. The following year, 10-5, played in 15 games. This last year, played in 16 games. They gave away DeAndre Hopkins. They made a bunch of stupid trades. He was 4-12. His completion percentage, however, was 70%, and he led the league with 4,800 yards. And I know when you're on a bad team, you're playing from behind, you're throwing a lot. His yards per attempt, 8.9 yards per game, led the league. However, 8.2 2 years ago and 7.8 last year. Like, he is a great player. And in terms of his durability, he's missed one game in the last 3 years. 48 games, he's played in 47, and he's 25 years old. There's always the risk of any quarterback, especially one who runs, can get, you know, in trouble outside the pocket, but that can happen in the pocket too. The bottom line is, Josh Allen seems to be on his way maybe to greatness. Lamar Jackson, and he's a running quarterback. Lamar Jackson's a running quarterback for whom they design plays. They design running plays for him. And maybe he can be great when it matters most. I would take Deshaun Watson. Like, the things that I don't know about with those two guys yet, I know about Deshaun Watson. No, he hasn't had deep playoff runs, but look at the teams he's been on. I'm outraged as a Giants fan that they're not in on Deshaun Watson. The hell are they going to do with their first-round picks? Draft the Flowers again? Get out of here. There'll be four offensive tackles available. They'll take the worst one as usual. Jordan Schultz, ESPN NBA analyst, insider, joins me on the Goodyear Hotline. What's up, Jordan?
Hey, what's up, brother?
So, Jordan, we were in a heated debate on First Take today, as always, about the MVP. LeBron and the first place Lakers, Western Conference leading Lakers, take on Embiid off the not on the injury report tonight, and the first place in the Eastern Conference Sixers. Who's the MVP so far?
I got to go LeBron, and you know Embiid's been great, but I looked at what the Lakers are doing specifically with LeBron, Max, and what's so impressive to me is that he has been able to manage his game, manage his style. He's shooting more threes than ever, yet he's shooting 19 shots per game, a bottom five figure for him. And I think having Schroeder has allowed LeBron to take his foot off the gas when he needs, but he's actually been more efficient. And if you go back to the other night against Cleveland when he goes for 46 and he just hits a barrage of step-back threes, that's kind of this new version of LeBron, where he's dominant when he needs to be, but because the Lakers are deeper, and I think this team is better, he doesn't have to be all things to all people all the time. And I think that's a big credit to him for recognizing. It's also a credit to that staff. But he's playing a lot of minutes, as is Embiid, as is KD. And I think LeBron right now, at this early stage, Max, is the MVP.
Jordan Schultz, ESPN NBA analyst, insider here on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Now, let me make the argument for Embiid, which who I believe should be the MVP so far. First of all, I don't believe in regular season MVP. It's absurd. More than 50% of the teams make the playoffs, so why is there a regular season MVP? It's never going to come from a non-playoff team. Let's let all the high-leverage games play out and see what's what. So by that standard, LeBron's the MVP every year. And LeBron's the best player in the game. He's better than Embiid. Agreed, agreed, agreed.
Yeah.
But in terms of value so far this year, Embiid has the best PER in the league. You know, and why do I use that stat? It's not perfect, but when people talk points, rebounds, assists, true shooting percentage, all that stuff, PER does that as a rate and tells you he's way ahead of LeBron in that stat. In other words, he's been at least statistically the best offensive player. Defensively, eyeballing it, I think he's probably also been the best defensive player in the league. And he's doing it in the league where it's hard for big men to be the best, right? His team is in first place in the conference. So even though LeBron has played four more games than Embiid, it hasn't affected the value to the team. And because of Dwight Howard, they really need him on the floor. Like, Dwight Howard needs to paint the score. So does Ben Simmons, because neither one shoots. So when Embiid's not there, it doesn't function. To the point where those four games that he's missed, Jordan, we see what they are without him. They're getting blown out. They're getting blown out by bad teams. Yeah. Blown out by bad teams. Yeah. So for that reason, in a close race between Embiid, LeBron, and KD, I have Embiid at this moment number one.
So I totally understand. The pushback for me now, Mr. Kellerman, is that I would say the Lakers are plus 7 points per 100 possessions when LeBron is on the floor and AD is not. And now the numbers are similar for Embiid, but because the Lakers, to me, are the best team in the league, they're going to win 60 games, 55 games, whatever you want to call it. I believe more consistently LeBron's going to be that guy as we go, let's say, the last 6 weeks of the season. And also for me as a concern with Embiid, it's just the health. You know, I mean, there's always the health with him. Now, he's in great shape. He's playing really hard, and that's all great. But I do wonder for a full season, even if it's 10 games less, if he can do it.
Oh, yeah, if you're going to talk about who's actually going to win it, I think for those reasons, Embiid probably, you know, I don't know if I'd take Embiid to win the award, but I think at this moment, if it came out this moment, he'd have my vote if I had one.
That's
By
fair.
The way,
That's very fair.
You're talking about LeBron's changing. He's never shot the three this much or this efficiently. Like, he's now shooting it
over,
more efficiently.
Over 40%.
And taking, like, seven of them a game. He's absolutely amazing. Like Brady in the NFL, only he maintains his status as the number one player in the game 1,000 years into his career. What else is on your mind in the NBA right now? Like, of all the issues going on, what do you think is flying under the radar?
I think the Utah Jazz. I mean, they quietly won 9 in a row. They hammered Milwaukee. They hit a franchise best threes. And oh, by the way, they have the second best point differential in the league. This is per cleaning the glass, which takes out blowouts. Plus 10.8. The only team better is the Lakers. And they're the only team, the Jazz are, that are number one and number two in offensive and defensive efficiency over the last 2 weeks. In other words, no team is both in the top 10. So they've been great. They've gotten better.
Over the last 2 weeks, although the Lakers are top five in both, I think, over the season, right?
Yes, but the Jazz over the last 2 weeks have been the best team in the league. I know it's a small sample size, but we've been trying to find who in the West can challenge the Lakers. Is it the Clippers? Can Portland do it? Maybe Denver gets right. I just don't feel like Utah has gotten a ton of mention. But if Conley's going to play this well and Gobert and Donovan Mitchell and they're going to defend at this rate, there's no reason why they can't be a team that can make a push.
See, I think the under-the-radar team, because they've been so ravaged by COVID and injury to Porzingis in the beginning, is the Mavs. I think that when they get it all together, no one's thinking about them right now. In fact, Utah's playing the Mavs without Donovan Mitchell tonight because he's been diagnosed with a concussion, or rather he's in concussion protocol, exhibiting symptoms which may explain the 9 points last night. But a couple days ago, Shaq, in the post game, told Donovan Mitchell, hey, I'm telling people that you can't get to the next level. What do you have to say to that? And Donovan responds, I've been hearing that since high school, you know, like whatever. And Shaq said, that's what I want to hear you say. But Shaq has been hit with criticism since then. My take is this. I want to hear yours, Jordan. My take is this. There are some players who are allowed to play elder statesmen. Players who had a lot of criticism directed at them. Hey, you know, Shaq, why are you getting swept by Olajuwon, Shaq? What's up? Why are you getting swept by MJ the next year? You got Penny. You got a crew. You won 60 games. What's up? Take it to the next level. And Shaq, instead of, you know, whether or not he liked it at the time, he did it. He used it as motivation, did it, and won 4 championships, often as the best player in the NBA. So he does get those elder statesman rights to say that to players, particularly when he's rooting for them. He wants them to do better. He's challenging them. What's your take on Shaq saying that to Donovan?
Well, that's the point with Shaq, is that, you know, I've known him for basically 2 decades. And with the thing about Shaquille is when he comes at you, he's coming at you out of a place of love. You know, we heard Malone go after Zion. I felt like that was criticism. Mm-hmm. Shaq will come at you with constructive criticism, but he wants guys to succeed. I believe genuinely he wants that. So when he says to Donovan Mitchell, are you going to be this guy? Are you going to take Utah to the promised land for the first time? I genuinely believe he's trying to motivate him. And so not that Mitchell needs it now. I mean, the guy's averaging 23 points. And looking at the numbers, a career best 40% from three, career high in assists. So I like that Shaq comes at guys, but you do have to take it with a grain of salt because, to me at least, Shaquille's doing it out of a place of love.
I agree with that. Meantime, we haven't talked about the Nets. And here's the thing, Jordan, like a big three is a big three. There's no other big three in the league at the moment. But what strikes me as unique about this big three is all three can get their shots at an elite level and all can score at all three levels at a totally, like, historically elite level. I've never heard of a big three that can do that. And for that reason, whatever other problems they have, and by the way, none of them are the best shooter on the team. Joe Harris shoots better than all of them. Because of that, whatever trials and tribulations they experience, I expect them to come out of the East. What do you expect?
100%. 100%. So you talked about KD being in the conversation. He could legitimately win MVP and Comeback Player of the Year award. And I think with the Nets, you know, there is that learning process. It already happened with Kyrie and Kevin, and now you bring in James Harden. I think this Nets team is going to supplant last year's Mavs team as the best offense ever. And because KD is so versatile, I don't think we've ever seen a superstar of his magnitude, Max, be able to adjust and elevate, almost be a force multiplier for everyone else around him, especially the great players like James and Kyrie.
Oh, that's a great point.
As a force multiplier.
Yeah. Like Kevin Durant, and that tells you a lot about how, in a way, dysfunctional the dynamic on those Thunder teams were. Because you're right, KD's a force multiplier. He is additive. He is a complementary on any roster ever invented. There's no roster ever in the history of basketball where KD wouldn't make it better. And yet those Thunder teams, in a way, couldn't get out of their own way.
Right, exactly. And part of that was Russ. You know, they had issues with Scottie Brooks. There was a lot of problems there. Yeah. But now KD is almost identical as the 2013-14 season when he won the MVP. True shooting is over 65%.
Oh.
He has a coach in Steve Nash that's allowing him to play the way he wants to play. And he's playing a ton of minutes, and he's guarding. He guards the best player every night. And that's huge for me if I'm a Brooklyn fan, because you did trade away Jared Allen, who's a really good shot blocker.
And you have to imagine they're going to get at least a defensive rebounder at some point before the trade deadline. That's such a great way to put it. He's a force multiplier, and the force that he's multiplying is James Harden, Kyrie Irving, and Joe Harris on offense. I agree with Jordan Schultz, NBA insider analyst here at ESPN. I agree with Jordan Schultz. The Nets will supplant last year's Mavs. A lot of people don't know about last year's Mavs in terms of offensive efficiency. The Nets will have the best offense of all time by the time the finals roll around this year. I still don't think it's enough to beat the Lakers. Jordan Schultz, ladies and gentlemen, a newly reimagined Sports Nation is back only on ESPN+. Taylor Twellman, Trevor Scales, and Ashley Brewer relive the night's most memorable plays, best reactions from social media, top 10 lists, deep dives, and more. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com. You can catch me every day on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus at 2 p.m. Eastern, along with Greeny at 10 a.m., Barton Hahn at noon. You heard from Alan Hahn earlier on this show. And Shanae and Golic Jr. at 4 p.m., all Eastern Standard, of course. Is this the most impressive run for Tom Brady ever? It's time for some Straight Talk. Look, we all drop our phones. It happens. You fumble it, crack it, splash it. Well, Straight Talk Wireless offers this new Platinum Unlimited plan that includes phone protection. Just $65 a month for unlimited talk, text, and data, plus 20 gigs of hotspot and 100 gigs of cloud storage and more, all in the best networks. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. See mobile protect terms and conditions at Asurion.com/straighttalk. Limitations and exclusions apply. Is this the best run of Tom Brady's career? Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Is this Brady's most impressive run? I'm going to give you a hint. The answer rhymes with yes! 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance.
What Thomas Edward Brady has done in his 40s just flat boggles my mind.
How can you just put on another jersey and wind up in the same situation, which is another Super Bowl appearance?
You know, I told Stephen A. this on the air today, and he almost had a conniption. Smoke was coming out of his ears. But I mean it. I'm not fooling around. I mean it. Everyone who assumed Brady's going to do this, why are you impressed? I'm the only one who really has the right to talk to you about how great this is. I never thought he could do it. I mean, it's possible, but it was so far-fetched. It's like, you know, Muhammad Ali gets all this credit for beating George Foreman in the Rumble in the Jungle, Zaire, 1974. Foreman was a 5-1 favorite. Foreman was 40-0 with 37 knockouts, had dribbled Joe Frazier like a basketball when Frazier was the champ. And Ali had lost twice, once to Frazier and once to Norton, who Foreman knocked out also in two rounds. He wasn't supposed to be able to do it, Ali, but he did it. He slew the monster, the dragon, right? Like, Father Time undefeated. I thought Bernard Hopkins might have fought him to a draw. Then Father Time knocked him out of the ring when he was 50. You know, Julio Franco was hitting the baseball pretty well at the age of 43, 44. At 46, eventually he had to retire. Satchel Paige in his 40s. Post-Negro Leagues career. Was getting guys out in Cleveland, out of the bullpen. Been some great old athletes. LeBron James, he's not that age, but in basketball years, the miles on his legs, my God, and he's still the best player in the game? But when you do it, you're overcoming the odds. You can't take for granted it's going to happen. People took for granted Brady was going to be great until he was 43. It had never been done before. Warren Moon was the oldest ever to be really good. He was 41. Testaverde and Flutie were serviceable at 40, 41. By the time those guys were 43, they were cooked. Brady's going to the Super Bowl at 43. Yeah, this is easily his most impressive run. Easily his most impressive run. Is it a trick question? Most impressive run. So start with what I just said. 43 years old, never been done before. Then go to this. He goes to a new team during COVID. So you can't practice with that team. There's no preseason, and practice is limited. You got it. Now, they are loaded. The Bucs are loaded. The Bucs are so loaded that Jameis Winston led the league with 30 interceptions last year thrown, handed the team 112 points off those interceptions. They still won seven games. They were 7-9 even in spite of that. They're loaded, but I don't care how loaded they are. You don't just walk in, no preseason, limited practice, and you're in the Super Bowl? And how did he get to the Super Bowl at 43 on a new team with no preseason and limited practice? Without Belichick now. I mean, Bruce Arians a good coach. He ain't Bill Belichick. How did you get there? You had to beat a very good Washington defense on the road. No great shakes to beat Washington, but that's a good defense. That's who he's playing is that defense. Beat him on the road. Then goes to Drew Brees' house. Drew Brees is on the best team he's been on maybe since he won the Super Bowl. Drew Brees is supremely motivated because this might be the last game of his career. Drew Brees has a number two receiver for the first time after Michael Thomas in Emmanuel Sanders and a running back in Kamara who can catch passes and do everything. Drew Brees has a defense, was playing lights out at one point this year. And Drew Brees had a tie game in the fourth quarter. I tweeted it out at the time. Okay, here's crunch time. Who's going to get it done? The answer was Tom Brady, not Drew Brees. Brees, who, by the way, he's coming off an injury, collapsed lung and fractured ribs. But as a result, or punctured lung and fractured ribs, he didn't have to play football for weeks and weeks and weeks. I thought maybe he'll be fresher. He won't be worn down. Tom Brady won. Drew Brees lost. Drew Brees was throwing interceptions in the fourth quarter. Tom Brady wasn't. Then he goes to Lambeau Field to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Rodgers on the best team he's been on since he won the Super Bowl. Rodgers going to win MVP in a landslide. He ran away with it in a league with a prime Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson and still Tom Brady and Drew Brees and all these guys. Rodgers going to run away. Russell Wilson going to run away with the MVP. Had a pretty good defense. It was playing well at the time. He's at Lambeau. Once again, here we are late in the game. It's close. Rodgers doesn't get it done. Brady does. And now they're going to the Super Bowl. This is easily and by far the most impressive run Tom Brady's ever had to the Super Bowl. Easily and by far. And by the way, I don't know if he thinks easily and by far, but Bill Barnwell ranked this year's path as Tom Brady's, in fact, most impressive run to the Super Bowl. It's unbelievable. Anyone, from the time I made the Cliff prediction in 2016 till now, if a player had started his career when I made that prediction and ended it right now, you'd elect him to the Hall of Fame. He was in the Super Bowl every year but one. He'd won an MVP. And when he lost the Super Bowl, he threw for 500 yards. Did the Baseball Hall of Fame get it right? Did they get it right? Is Curt Schilling right? Last take coming up. The latest 30 for 30, Al Davis versus the NFL, looks back on the long-running feud between Raiders owner Al Davis and NFL commissioner Pete Rozelle, two of the most influential figures in the history of pro football. Beginning in the mid-1960s, when Rozelle was the NFL's young commissioner, and Davis led the rival AFL, and continuing through the 1980s when Davis waged a lawsuit against the league to allow him to move the Raiders from Oakland to Los Angeles, the two titans were constantly and very publicly at odds. It's like a RFK and Jimmy Hoffa or something. The latest 30 for 30, Al Davis versus the NFL, premieres February 4th at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Can't wait for this one. Immediately following its debut, check out the Jalen and Jacoby After Show. Sorry, I know why I keep saying that wrong, because Raj typed it wrong. Raj, it's not check out the Jalen and Jacoby The After Show. It's simply check out Jalen and Jacoby The After Show. Jalen and Jacoby are incapable of making a bad show. Those two guys are great. Jalen and Jacoby, the After Show podcast, where the guys will be joined by director Ken Rogers. Listen and subscribe to Jalen and Jacoby, the After Show, whenever, wherever you get your podcasts. Last take coming up.
Bart and Han.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Should Curt Schilling be removed from the Hall of Fame ballot? He wants to be. asked the Hall of Fame to remove his name. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Stephen A. Smith goes beyond the headlines to unlock a unique world of hot takes, one-of-a-kind segments, and can't-miss interviews. Stream all this and more on his new show, Stephen A.'s World, exclusively on ESPN+. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com, and you can catch me every weekday on ESPN Radio and ESPN+ at 2 p.m. Eastern, along with Greeny at 10 a.m., Barton Hahn at noon, and Shanae Ngolick Jr. at 4 p.m. Eastern.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because yeah. I know on First Take, I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's last take.
Curt Schilling was not voted into the Hall of Fame. Next year is his last year of eligibility by the writers, and then he goes to the Veterans Committee, right? Like, then that's the only way to get in. And he sent a letter to the Hall of Fame saying, hey, take me off the list. Don't vote on me anymore. He doesn't respect the writers. They don't know what they're talking about. And though he doesn't believe he's a Hall of Famer, he'd prefer guys who actually played the game to get him in if he's going to get in. First, let me say, Curt Schilling is one of two things. And I interviewed him when I was working at CNN. I was at his house, and he and his wife were very nice, and the kids were very nice. It was a nice family. And I've been very surprised since then to hear the way and see the way he's behaved in public. He is either just a rotten guy, or he's incredibly stupid. I don't see, I guess the third option would be impossibly confused. But be that as it may, he was one of the greatest clutch players in the history of baseball, period. And he's a Hall of Famer. It is not hard to know that Curt Schilling's a Hall of Famer. It's not a close call. If it was only the regular season, it would be a close call. Three times he finished second in the Cy Young voting. Three times. He struck out more than 300 guys in a season three times. His strikeout-to-walk ratio in his prime is some of the best of all time. He won 20 games twice in an era where that was still hard. That was hard to do. Had over 200 wins and far fewer losses. Had a real good ERA every year. And whip, walks to hits, innings, all those stats, right? By the stats, borderline. The quality of his prime, yes, he's Hall of Fame, but did he have enough longevity with the quality of prime? Borderline. I would still say maybe. But what, are we going to ignore what he did in the postseason? He was 11-2 in the postseason for three different teams. For the Phillies, for the D-backs, and for the Red Sox. His ERA was barely above 2. His walks and hits to innings pitched was under 1 in a large sample size. The Phillies went to the World Series. He was the ace of that team and pitched very well throughout the playoffs. The Diamondbacks won the World Series. He and Randy Johnson were the two aces of that team, and he pitched very well. And the Red Sox won the World Series with him on the staff twice. The first time as the ace, the second time as the kind of remains of himself, and still pitched pretty well the second time. He's one of the all-time great big game pitchers, period. And he was legitimately great for a long time in his career. He's obviously a Hall of Famer. And his and the kind of despicable things he said in public have nothing to do with that. And spare me the morals clause of the Hall of Fame, and I'll tell you why. Kennesaw Mountain Landis, the commissioner who drew the color line in Major League Baseball, is in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame. You think if someone has white supremacist tendencies, they're out of the Hall of Fame? Kennesaw Mountain Landis is in. Now, let me make things really easy about the Hall of Fame, okay? Because Bonds didn't get in, and neither did Clemens. This is not that hard. Apparently, it's hard for a lot of people, not for me. And in fact, the way to fix the Hall of Fame in baseball, just leave it up to me. I got the whole thing figured out. This is how it is. And remember this, because it's going to help you think about this if you're a baseball fan, even if you're not. If you cheated in such a way where it can be proven definitively, that is a different player now. They were not going to the Hall of Fame. Then they cheated, and then they were going to the Hall of Fame. You're not in the Hall of Fame. No Mark McGwire, no Sammy Sosa. And I don't have time to get in. I could do this on another show. McGwire was never going to get in the Hall of Fame. Started juicing, was a Hall of Fame caliber player. Same thing with Sosa. They weren't going to sniff the Hall of Fame. But on the stuff, they were Hall of Famers. That's not a Hall of Famer, no. Barry Bonds was already one of the greatest players of all time with one of the greatest careers of all time before he started cheating. That's a Hall of Famer. The cheating doesn't disqualify him because he was already a Hall of Famer. Clemens was more on the fence, but I would say yes to Clemens. when he went to Toronto and suddenly went back-to-back triple crown of pitching, Cy Young's in Toronto, when he was in decline in Boston already. But he's already a borderline Hall of Famer, and he pitched for so much longer. Even if you take away a lot of what he accomplished, he's still probably going to get in the Hall of Fame. That's a yes on Bonds, duh. It's also a yes on Clemens. Forget it, juicing aside, like even with the juice they're in, Sosa and Maguire, no. And Curt Schilling, yes, on the merits. He's a Hall of Famer. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Two MVP candidates tonight going head-to-head. Lakers, Sixers, Embiid, LeBron, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.